Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spell babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And good to have Lakers basketball back, although it wasn't the prettiest game. Lakers escaped with a win in Utah, moved to 12-4, tied for the third best record in the league, tied for the second seed in the West, D. But certainly not a pretty game. And I'm of two minds of this. My more forgiving perspective is that LeBron is working his way back into a rhythm, right? And we've seen this, we've seen him come back from injury a few times, that there's a certain ramp up that he does to get back to the level he is, that you just got to go through the games and get the reps in to do that. Go from those baby lungs that he was talking about to more. And I thought that, he, you know, I think that we're seeing that a bit with his play. I didn't think he played particularly well last night. I also think that when you have 4 days off like that, we think about having legs as being a function of whether or not you're tired. But I also think that there's a certain rhythm that comes with playing more frequently, that you can lose your legs from not playing enough or not frequently enough. And there's also an element of preparation in that. I know this is something that Dirk talks about on the Prime show about, like, hey, guys, don't prepare the way they used to. So that's going to pop up as well. And last but certainly not least, and this is the major thing that I'd want to focus on in this element of it, is I don't think the Lakers really respect Utah. And the last several years, whenever I've felt like they haven't respected a team much, they played just hard enough to get the win. And that is always reflected in the Lakers' net rating versus their record. It's like the Lakers have the net rating of a 500 team or slightly better, but they're usually significantly better than that because they do win these games by just barely enough. My more critical perspective is that you're not going to get there. You're not going to get to the top playing like this. And it's not about the other team. It's about building your habits, getting used to playing for 48, getting used to building what you do rather than just simply defeating that team on the other side that night, D. But there's also the, like, you know, we have to have a 5 day a week Lakers podcast, that it's easy to lose the forest from the trees type of thing. But I do think that that point is accurate as well, that like OKC kills teams like this fairly frequently, and that there is a gap between that and there, that I'd love to discuss that with you more broadly in terms of the game specifically, D, I thought that Maxi Kleber was tremendous in that game. We'll talk about that. Luka had some highlights and all that, but go whatever direction you'd like with that, D, whether it's the game last night or just that more big picture idea.
I'll start with LeBron, Pete. I looked at this two or three seasons ago when LeBron was approaching like the age of a player where you no longer expect him to be great every night. The fact that he's still been able to be great every night up until this season is where he's only played two games so far speaks to the incredible just force of nature that LeBron James has been. LeBron is like a 38-year-old or 39-year-old or whatever. I found it funny that, to your point about rhythm and playing every night, some of LeBron's worst games were with two or more days rest rather than the games that were back-to-back or even the games where they only had one standard night off. When you looked at his breakdown of stats, which you can do at his stats page at NBA.com, the season that I looked, his numbers on a back-to-back and his age 39 season were consistently better than his games with two or more days rest. Why does this make sense? It kind of doesn't, but to your point, it totally does. When you've been an NBA player for half your life and you're used to the cadence of an NBA season, you get these long breaks like this, and long breaks can be good for health and they can be bad for your basketball at times, right? Because you do lose the rhythm. You do lose the every game, every day, sort of like a baseball player.
You get dialed in. You get dialed in to a certain way of playing, and that this is just what you do. That it's very easy to lose.
The connection between mind and body in this way for all sports, but I think basketball especially, there's a focus and a being locked in that drives your ability to do the things physically that you need to do on the court. And to your point about the respect factor, I think that the Lakers were not sharp, partly because focus dwindles when respect goes down. There's a correlation between those things. But also, I think that you can only do so much in terms of replicating when it comes to practice. I think it was the most recent practice JJ had talked about. It's been getting chippy at practice because we've been practicing against each other this whole time. So it'll be good to play a different team. But the flip side of that is there's only so much you can do in practice to replicate what's going to happen in a game. And so the Lakers are not where I'd want them to be from an execution standpoint, from how well they're playing. They're also 12-4. And
yeah.
In zooming out, there's immense value in racking up wins at this point of the season and stacking these wins rather than dealing with the win one, lose one, win two, lose one, win three, lose two. We've been in recent Lakers seasons where it's been exactly like that. The sort of constant stepping on a rake idea of which direction is our season going? Are we really trending the way that we want? You can trend the way that you want in quality of play, but you also want that reflected in the standings. And so if you were to ask me, would I want the Lakers to be playing awesome right now, but be 8-6? Or would I want them to be playing like not their best basketball, but be 12-2 or whatever, or 12-4? I'd take the record because we're so early in the season. I like the fact that they're up in the standings right now and that they're not in eighth or ninth. We've seen so many seasons where it's just like, oh, the Lakers hovering at the play-in line for 20 games, 25 games, 30 games, and then suddenly they have to turn it on. But then you feel like you've been in the playoffs for 6 weeks before you even get to the playoffs. And that's exhausting in its own way. In a conference where you want home court advantage for sure in the first round, standing watch starts like after 2 weeks. Because if you get off to a bad start, your season can be tanked at the end of the game. I texted you last night. I was just like, I'll take it. My heart was pounding at the end. Is Markkanen going to hit this shot or what's going to happen here? But they pulled it out and very happy that they were able to get a win where playing the same team in back-to-back games, having so much time off, you're on the road. It's like sort of a weird quirk of the schedule. It's good to get a win like that.
Yes, it is. And it's certainly not the last game that will fit this sort of definition. I do want to pick some nits, but there's also a positive one. So I'll give you three topics, D. Pick one for me, which way you want to go in with this. The two nitpicks, I suppose, is one, Austin and Luka three-point shooting has been kind of a rough thing against, this is not just a Utah thing, but this has been a, you know, Austin's at like 31%, Luka's in the low 30s as well. Rui has, I don't think, played in either of the fourth quarters of these last two games. That might be matchup specific, but we could talk about that a bit. And then on the positive side, Maxi Kleber plays his best game as a Laker. His defense was, I thought, superb. His closeout on Keontae George as the Lakers were trying their best to lose that game at the end really, I thought, saved what would have been an open shot and made him double clutch and kind of airmailed that. That was one of several key defensive plays that he made. Got beat a couple of times, but it's so interesting, D, because they played about a quarter's worth of really good defense in that game. And this is how it often goes in games like this, where they're playing a bad team that they don't respect, that they're going to play just hard enough to beat. We've seen this so many times over the years with a bunch of teams where it's like, okay, we're going to really turn it up for this one stretch, win it by 20 points because we're that much better than this team when we do play hard, and then sort of coast the rest of the way. And they got the W just by the skin of their teeth. But Kleber was a huge part of the defense there. And I did not have on my bingo card in this season Maxi Kleber closing games, where DA did go out with a knee contusion at the beginning. As we record this, we don't have an update to the severity of that or anything, but didn't have him closing games, D, and he played very well. So let's take a break here. Pick one of those topics. We'll come back and talk about it.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let's stick with Kleber, Pete, because we're halfway down the runway now with everything that you explained. And I do want to stick on something positive for a moment. I did not have that on my bingo card either. I had Kleber in 1,000 different variations of trades. And honestly, one of the only reasons why I didn't think that trade would happen is because of more of his closeness to Luka rather than what I thought he would do on the court as a contributor. I had listened to some Mavs people in the aftermath of the Kleber trade, and Lakers fans sort of eyeing Kleber as this possible player who could come back and maybe help the team. And then when that didn't happen last year, the prospect of him even being a contributor this year dwindling, but that still being potentially hopeful. And Mavs people sort of being like, you know, I love Maxi, but he's probably over that hump now of more towards washed than helpful rotation player. I don't know if he could do this every night. he had a shift a few games ago, and I thought he acquitted himself well in that shift as well. Then he didn't play again for a couple of games. And so it could just be, Pete, that Kleba's like an every two or three game player rather than an every game player. If he were to end up in the rotation for multiple games straight, I wonder what sort of production we would see. Kleba's a very useful archetype. You talked about all of the defensive stuff, and I want to get back to that. But the dunk that he got where he drove a closeout in his last shift, a guy closed out on him hard too, and he drove and then kicked and created an open three, I think, for Austin maybe a few games ago. Defenses treat him a way where they see him standing behind the arc, and Lakers fans should know this well. He hit that damn game winner against them two seasons ago.
I still see him, yeah, and like, when Kleba checks in the game, I sort of twitch a little bit. Like, yeah, it's the first thing.
Man. 100%. And so when defenses close out on him and he's able to make a play off the dribble, again, a few games ago, it was him driving and kicking to create an open three. This past game, it was driving and getting a two-hand dunk, which was a critical basket. And then you talk about the defensive plays, the blocks and the hard closeouts and the plays that he's making, those are above what I thought he was capable of at this point. But the positional defense and the know-how are things that I knew that he had. And to see those show up on every possession, is he going to get beat sometime still? Yeah, he's going to get beat sometime still. Is he going to rebound at the rate you want him to rebound at? Probably not. He was never a great rebounder in general, but positionally and understanding of where to be and how to execute the scheme, I'm super pleased that he's continuing to show that possession after possession after possession. And that sort of stuff is helpful. And it's helpful when he's the lone big playing against a team that doesn't really have a dominant big guy to sort of take him into the post or score against him or whatever, like a difficult matchup for him. It's also super useful when he's the second big playing next to Ayton or playing next to Jackson Hayes against a team that's playing a little bit bigger. And so I've been very happy with his last two appearances, and the Lakers don't beat the Jazz last night without him playing.
Certainly not. No, he was a huge part of that game and one of the game balls to him. You covered most of what I would want to cover there. The one thing that I would add is that, similar to Jackson Hayes, I like role players whose competitiveness does not vary by how interested the stars are. I saw Iztok describe Luka as bored Luka in that game, right? And despite the nutmeg he did on Kevin Love, man, like, nutmegging a guy on the move like that laterally, that's such an incredible move. He had the behind the head pass to Marcus Smart for the three, had the split of the high hedge with the behind the back dribble, just did some masterful stuff for sure. Despite
that Euro finish that he had where he actually wrong footed the finish on the Euro. I can't recall the last time I saw someone do a Euro into a wrong foot finish. It's just like, who does this?
Someone on the playback last night was like, Luka's out here doing side quests tonight, right? Like, it was like, they were like, they knew they had enough to beat the Jazz, and he was out there just doing all that. But yeah, he did see, like, him, LeBron, Austin, there was just a level of looseness to that game that for good stretches of it that you could see that I appreciate guys like Kleba and Jackson and a couple others. That
Smart is like this too.
Smart is like this as well, where it's like they go out there and they compete, you know, regardless of who the opponent was. However, D, between Luka, Austin, and LeBron, who I kind of put to the side right now because he is ramping back up, those three combined for 4 of 24 from three-point range. Again, like I said, both Austin and Luka are currently very high attempt three-point shooters, 11 per game for Luka, 7.9 from Austin. They have identical three-point shooting percentages, 31.1% on that. Lakers are a bottom five three-point shooting team, both in volume and percentage, shooting 32.7 threes per game at 33.3%. And again, I think those two guys at the top are a big part of that. So what's your perspective on that?
So JJ, after the game, said, we're one of the worst three-point shooting teams right now. And he's like, and I don't think that's who we are as a team. I tend to agree with him. That said, when your highest volume three-point shooters are actually not great, great shooters, Luka gets them up, man. It's not going to be a rare thing to see him in double-digit attempts in threes and be...
He averages that.
Yeah, so he'll have those nights where it's he's 3 for 12 or 4 for 12. And 4 for 12 is 33%, and that's below league average. And I think about this more with Austin than I do with Luka, even though Luka takes way more of these and is not good at them either, necessarily, is the ratio between pull-up threes and catch-and-shoot threes. I'd like to see Austin take fewer pull-up threes in general than he has been. And so in the last five games, Austin is 9 for 32 from three. And he's 4 for 11 on catch-and-shoot threes. So that's 36.4%. That's not great, but it's about league average. On pull-ups, he is 5 for 21. That's 23.8%. Mm. And being able to hit the pull-up three is important for any on-ball shot creator. It is, I think, a necessary part of your shot diet in order to keep defenses honest. If a team goes under a screen or sags off you a certain way, you have to be able to take and make that shot and show that you're a threat. There is also, though, a number of I'm dribbling the ball and I'm just going to sidestep and shoot a deep three. Like I said, Luka does this more than Austin, but Luka's step back is like a critical part of his arsenal.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I want to see it be less of a volume shot for him, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but it's a critical part of his arsenal.
You are correct. You are correct about that.
It's
yes.
I use other moves to set this up. And then because I set this up with those moves, I can then go to those moves again later because when I do my split in between the legs dribble, if I hang it just a little bit, you think I'm stepping back and instead I explode again and then I'm by you and he gets to the basket. And so there is a push and pull with Luka in this way where it's just like, understand it. Does he go to it too often? He does. Austin, though, I want Austin to be way more of a downhill player, like 80, 90% of the time. I want him going downhill in order to shoot off the dribble jumpers, off of drives, right? And so I don't want Austin sidestepping or stepping back from behind the arc because I don't think that's really a good shot for him at all. I would much rather him come off of a screen, a higher ball screen, a guy show back pressure and him like lean into an off the dribble three way more than I would his defenders in front of him and then him have to step back and shoot a three. If I'm talking about the types of off the dribble pull-up threes, I much prefer the former than the latter. And so I just pulled that five-game sample for Austin. That's basically two-thirds of his threes, essentially, like 21 out of his 32, are off the dribble threes. That ratio is way out of whack to me, Pete. And so when we talk about the Lakers not being a good three-point shooting team overall, if Austin's taking eight threes a game or however many he's taking and Luka's taking double digit threes and they're both taking more difficult quality threes, which are the off the dribble ones, it doesn't surprise me when it's just like, oh, well, the Lakers aren't a good shooting team.
Yeah.
Your two most high volume players are taking the hardest ones.
Absolutely. That is what it is to me, is just a level of difficulty that both of them take in terms of those type of shots. So let's take a break here. Come back. I want to give my perspective on that.
Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I don't love having this conversation necessarily through the lens of numbers because I'm not anti a guy shooting 11 threes in the right game and in the right circumstances. It's really like a film type of thing where shot by shot, like this is a good shot, that's not a good shot, that's not a good shot, that to Reddick's comments about, I don't think that's the team that we are. My slight adjustment to that is that, no, that is the team that we are, but it's not the team that we could be. A lot of that comes down to the shot selection of those two guys. You know, when we lost to OKC, like I saw a level of Luka didn't trust his teammates, but I wanted to expound upon that more than I did in that pod, in that it's more about like a, I'm so used to doing this myself type of thing rather than a, I think lowly of the people around me. It's not really as much of a statement about that. It's just more like, I'm more confident in myself than anybody that you could put around me. But what I see happening with both Luka and Austin is, they have quite a few shooting turnovers where it's like, that's a hard shot that you're going to make maybe 20% of the time. And it's pretty as hell when it goes in, especially when it's Luka, right? It happens often enough to where it's like, oh, that was sweet, right? When it goes in. But in aggregate, when you combine that with the fact that the Lakers are bottom of the league in turnover percentage, there is a certain amount of D with this team where I'm like, still very excited about the meat left on the bone and that this is a fixable problem. It's something that it's just a reduction. It's just turning down a dial. It's not a completely different approach or anything like that. It's just being a little more judicious, a little more like, hey, I got a really good offensive player next to me. Let's try to get them a better attempt than this shot that I can make, but isn't a great type of shot.
What do you say to Hardy had talked about free throw disparity coming out of the last game? And then he's like, you know, my message to the guys was don't foul. And lay off and let them basically make them shoot jumpers over the top. So how much do you think that some of what the Lakers are doing is predicated on like the defense trying to keep them out of the paint, or is that too generous?
I don't think those are bad threes, D. If the defense is sagging off of you, yeah, sure. I want Austin and I want Luka to take those threes. It's the like on the move, 30-footer, drifting one direction with the hand in your face type of thing. Those are the ones that I don't want nearly as much of. And I think it's easy when you don't respect the team a ton or if you're a little bit tired, it's much easier in that moment to just be like, I'm going to pull this right here. Both of those guys get enough of those attempts to where it's their choice, right? It's their choice to do that.
Yeah, and it's hard to keep driving, especially when you're a high usage player.
Is it hard to keep posting up? Because in watching that game and the details, one of the irritations that I had is that Luka went into the post in that game in the first quarter and scored on them almost every time.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? And so yes. Is that a possible place in the middle of, yeah, of course it's hard to drive to the basket every time, and but like can the Lakers still get more production elsewhere without that?
I think that they can. I do think, though, that if we're measuring difficulty of how much legs you have to use in order to do something, particularly against the defense that is starting to like ramp up their pressure a little bit. And by the fourth quarter, I thought Utah was pressuring the Lakers a little bit more in terms of fighting them for position. LeBron had a late game possession where they ran action in order to get LeBron a post up. Keontae George actually pushed him out and LeBron ended up taking a bad three himself. Right. And so I don't want to necessarily remove LeBron from this part of the conversation. I get what you were saying about leaving him to the side because of the ramp up, but he can be just as guilty of this same
Absolutely.
Idea and
yes.
has been for multiple seasons that it's just like, look, we call it a nitpick for a reason. It's just like, these guys are excellent, 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 great basketball players. That it's
and we're
like,
12 and we're, 4.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not trying to undercut how good they are by highlighting this specific part of their game. But you talk about going from great to unguardable in any given game. Luka's unguardable when these shots go in. If he eliminated some of these shots and drove more, I honestly think that he'd be unguardable every night. And there's a certain unguardability a player of his quality has in general that, again, it's like we're playing with words a little bit. It's semantics to a certain degree. But you're giving the defense an out by taking some of the shots that these guys take.
I was watching this YouTube video the other day. I'm going to try to do one of your analogies and land the plane. I'm not as good at this as you are, but I'll see if I can do it. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Red Bull YouTube channel. It's really cool. They sponsor these interesting events. And the one that I was watching is this dude that hiked up to the top of Mount Everest with no supplemental oxygen and then skied all the way down. And he watched the whole thing. There are different base camps on Mount Everest as you get closer to the top. I think there's 4 of them. The Lakers are sitting at like the second base camp or maybe the third. It's amazing that you got this high up. You've really accomplished something. And what we're doing in this conversation by nature is talking about how do you get from there into what they call the death zone, where there's no oxygen and it's like the elite of the elite type of thing. You know what I'm saying? And so we got to pick some nits to be able to get there.
I hear people talk about this within the context of most improved player. People who vote for these awards will often say, you know, we always give this award to the guy who goes from like non-rotation player or fringe rotation player to being like more than a rotation player, or a player who goes from being good to very good. But there's a real argument that the leap of going from like very good to great, it's a harder leap to make.
I swear to God, if Austin doesn't get some freaking most improved votes this year,
totally.
Dude went from undrafted to, this is one of my many arguments of like, you motherfuckers do not ever vote for Lakers for these awards. How has Austin gotten, he's gotten like very few total votes over these last several years that to your point, like going from very good to, I mean, great. We have different definitions of great, but Austin's been tremendous. You know?
He's been awesome this year. And through 15 or 16 games, he's been, I think, one of the best stories in the league and someone who could easily have like all NBA traction if he kept up the numbers that he was putting up, particularly pre-LeBron. Before we wrap up, Pete, I want to pivot to something you brought up about Rui. The prospect of Rui getting squeezed within the context of shot attempts. I think it was this last game, but Rui didn't even take a shot until after LeBron got subbed out. So they're all on the court together. And it was really just Luka, LeBron, and Austin were the only guys shooting. Ayton wasn't getting the ball based off of Utah's coverages and them taking away the role. They were really trying to shrink the floor in order to, again, make the Lakers take outside shots that they were not making. But Rui didn't get a shot. LeBron went out, and suddenly on back-to-back possessions, Marcus got a shot attempt, and then Rui got a shot attempt. And I was just like, these are the first two guys to get looks outside of the big three all game. Then Rui didn't close. I'm wondering what you're seeing from Rui and whether or not you, it's only been a couple of games since LeBron has been back, but even with that context, like, are you seeing something different?
No, I just think it's a function of the environment. I think he's playing fine. He's doing his job. He's hitting his shots. He's taken 8 shots in those 2 games that we've played since LeBron has come back. He's scored a total of 19 points, so he's averaging under 10 a game on that. But he's 4 of 8 in one game, 3 of 8 in the other. But yeah, like, there's only one ball, D. You've got all these really good offensive players. And then when you go up against a team that's switching a lot, like Utah did, what that does is it boosts your stars' shot attempts and it reduces the shot attempts for all of those other guys that... I think it's partly a function of that. I don't think we need to react too heavily to this and that they played the same team, that Utah really likes to run and sort of get out in pace. That I think that one thing Redick likes to do is scale down slightly or go a little faster. He's hardly alone in that amongst NBA coaches. But like Rui at the 3 against faster teams can be less of a fit. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But I do think that this is part of a bigger idea where I want Rui to get shots. Rui's really good, especially on the offensive end.
That's right.
Him just being a decoy or a guy that, you got to stay with him. There are other guys you got to stay with. You were just describing Maxi as that. I want Rui to actually get shot attempts. I want Rui to actually get touches. And I think that that's part of the argument for him more with the bench units than other. It's not just like this relegation or something like that. It's like, Rui's really good. I want to use him.
Yeah, it's like, how will we be able to optimize your usage and your production?
Exactly.
It's something I'm watching for with the starting group. Kleba closing isn't necessarily the biggest story. Ayton was out. It's either him or Jackson. And they went with the shooter spacer. And like we talked about it in the preseason, like, hey, do you think Kleba could have a role over Jackson? And on some nights, he might.
Well, one thing that's interesting, too, to the point about switching is that, as you mentioned earlier, you can really negate lob threats with switching.
Yes.
That's an interesting decision. And I think the correct one by JJ to be like, well, we're not going to get lobs to him anyway. And his main offensive utility, let's go with the spacer.
And on the opposite side of the court, the Lakers were switching. And it was interesting to see Gabe in that group because he might start a possession on Keontae George, but he might finish it on Lauri Markkanen, or he might finish it on Filipowski.
He was starting a lot of possessions on Markkanen in the first place and actually won several of them. Markkanen had a really big fourth quarter, but they'd held him in check for the first three quarters, and Gabe was a big part of that.
He had like 9 points or something, like he was under 10 points for the longest time. He hit those couple of threes that were some of the biggest shots of the game late that really got it close and had that chance to, I think, maybe win it or put them ahead on the turnaround jumper that he took over LeBron, which was LeBron also got a lot of possessions on Markkanen. And I thought that on that final possession, they were just like, you know who we're putting on Lauri Markkanen is LeBron James. And that shows you too, like he may have been
out six
weeks or whatever, but
we need a
6'9 athlete. The guy we're calling is the 40-year-old.
He was so bad down the stretch of that game though, D. He was like,
The pace that he was playing with on offense was not great, but this goes back to how we started the pod, Pete. It's just like, I actually don't think 4 days off for LeBron James and telling him to go play a basketball game is actually what's best for him, particularly in this ramp-up phase. I would argue that he's burning the candle at both ends when you talk about like, oh, he needs to ramp up. He hasn't played in 6 weeks, and this is his second game back. I would have much preferred that his second game back be on a back-to-back than his second game back being 4 days after the first game. Right? Because it's like, it's too much time off. He might as well just been coming back from his first game. We gave a lot of credit to Kleba, and that was deserved. I thought Gabe had some real important defensive wins. He hit an important three as well. And look, I haven't been the guy who's been like endorsing Gabe to play more and more and more. But Gabe being a guy that on a switch is just like, no, I'm going to body you. No, I'm a fire hydrant guard. You're not just going to back me down. And he leveraged his height and his low center of gravity and pushed Markkanen back a couple times, pushed Filipowski back a couple of times. And I was just like, no, bro, like if you're going to beat me, you're going to have to shoot over the top. And you perfectly can do that. But it's going to be one where I'm all up in your jersey and making you feel uncomfortable about it. And so I just wanted to give Gabe his flowers within that context as well. Because on a game where Rui didn't close and Ayton was out, the Lakers went to Gabe and Cleveland. Yep. Those are two guys that I thought were like prime trade candidates to start the season, Pete.
Absolutely. And they may still be, right? But credit to Redick for spotting who was playing well and who wasn't that night. There's just nights where like Marcus wasn't playing that well. Jake had a very bad game. He only played 13 minutes and was bad in those. And like, that's going to happen. They're role players.
This is the depth idea that we were very high on this team. It's just like, there's a lot of guys that we think can play a real role on a good team. Are they the right guys for this team? I don't know. But we know that they can play, and you trust them in an environment where it's just like, no, we got to play serious basketball.
Yep.
If you got to play a serious basketball for 5 minutes, I'm sorry. Like, if he's physically right, I trust Gabe Vincent. If he's physically right, I trust Maxi Kleba. They are pros. They're the classic definition. Big picture, was it the best played game? No. Would I have liked the Lakers to play better? Of course. Am I thrilled to get another victory and push them up to 12-4? Abso-fucking-lutely.
Hell yeah.
It's super important that they stack these wins, and they got another one, so I'm perfectly happy with that.
As you texted us last night, we'll take it, right? So
that's right.
Plenty more going on in the world of the Lakers. I didn't even mention Adu Thiro's first full games that I wanted.
Oh, for the G League, hey, man.
We'll do that tomorrow. Let's do that tomorrow. We got Andrew Friedman and Farhan Zaidi joining the Lakers on some higher level stuff. We'll talk about that too. But until tomorrow, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me?
Unreal.
Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two. One.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable.
It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.